live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 349, wherein I'll talk to Monica Tanner. We're going to talk about her podcast. We're going to talk about her conversion. We're going to talk about her family. We're going to talk about being raised a young Jewish girl, not in the Intermountain West, what that experience was like. And we're probably going to chat about things that I haven't even alluded to along the way. Welcome, Monica.
I'm so happy to be here.
I feel like you're a bit taken back there with the introduction.
Well, I was kind of blown away to hear all those things about me all in a row like that. I was like, wow, that's me, I guess.
Well, what I like to do is make sure that I do the entire interview in your introduction so that then when I ask you questions, you're like, oh, but you already said that.
Perfect. Yeah, then I don't have anything else to say. You've said it all.
Stop. You have a tremendous amount to say. I want to start with your podcast. Tell people where it is, what it is, and why I, who do a podcast myself, you think would be interested in sharing your podcast.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, my podcast is called On the Brighter Side, and it's about a year and a half old. And it started out as a podcast just basically exploring my interests. And so I would have on guests that I felt like were successful in some area of life, marriage, or business. And I would ask my guests to share with us their experiences with success and failure and their habits and anything that they felt like were tips and tools and helpful information for those of us just starting out and trying to do something out of our comfort zone. That's my big, kind of my big plug, was that we all have a mission and purpose in life. And so once we find that, you know, it's our responsibility to carry out our mission, but how can we be successful? What do we need to be successful to carry that out? And so I just interviewed a whole bunch of people from all different walks of life who I felt like were successfully living out their mission. And I just picked their brains on everything that I was curious about. And just recently, I've kind of pivoted over towards marriage, which is kind of my first passion. I have been married for 17 years. I love being married. I kind of feel like a student of marriage. I'm always kind of examining relationships and reading books and so interested in what makes a good, strong relationship. And so we've kind of pivoted into the area of a stronger emphasis on what makes relationships successful. And so that's the podcast. We try to stay on the brighter side. My tagline is have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side. So that's that.
Now, you yourself are a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, heretofore known in this podcast as the Mormon Church, because I just don't have enough breath to say that again.
Yes, I am. I actually, this month, I think when you publish this, will be my 20-year anniversary of joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Heretofore known as the Mormon Church, because you don't have enough breath to say that. Welcome.
Right. Thank you.
Is your podcast very Mormon-y, or is it just sort of approachable by all?
You know, it's not, because of my kind of background and my upbringing. I don't talk a lot about the church. I mean, it's pretty clear that I am a person of faith, and I do believe in, you know, a higher being and deity, and I do refer to that a lot, but I don't really talk about the church or my affiliation with the church at all in my podcast.
So let's talk a little bit about then your upbringing and why that would be different.
Sure. So I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I was raised.
Oh, is that something
mom
on your
mom and dad?
Sorry, there was some audio. I'm not sure where that was coming from. Is that on my end or yours?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think we're good.
I don't hear it.
Okay. I think we're good. Let me go back. So tell me then a little bit about your upbringing then.
Sure. I was raised in Dallas, Texas, by in a Jewish family. So my family is Jewish all the way back on either side for as long as I've been able to find. My, you know, fifth great grandpa came into Ellis Island, traveled down to Texas, settled in Victoria, Texas, was one of the first families there. So my roots run deep in Judaism and in Texas. And so that's how I was raised.
I want to stop for a quick second, because to me, when I think of Judaism, I don't think of Texas.
Well, there's a lot of Jewish people in Texas for sure.
Okay. It's just something like I think of Eastern states or maybe, you know, but I don't think of.
Yeah, because I think they probably all came over and started there up in the Eastern states, but you know, have migrated. We're all over now. We've kind of permeated everywhere.
Okay. So you find yourself in that situation growing up. So how does that form your early years?
I had a fantastic childhood. I mean, everything I can remember about growing up, my parents were great. I had a live-in nanny / housekeeper who, you know, was just another parent to me who was wonderful. And, you know, I just had anything and everything a little girl could ask for. I went to Hebrew school on Sunday mornings. I mean, the Jewish Sabbath is Saturday, but we still did, you know, Sunday school where we learned to read Hebrew in preparation for what's called a bat mitzvah for a girl, which happens when you're 13. But for me, my parents divorced when I was 12, and I remember I was just getting ready to do my bat mitzvah, and the news of the divorce and, you know, kind of everything that ensued after that just kind of derailed me. My parents were like, "Do you still want to do this?" And I was like, "Heck no." And so I didn't actually have my own bat mitzvah, but I, you know, got to see all my friends go through the process. So
was your rejection of a bat mitzvah like, "Fine, parents, if you're not going to live the traditional way, neither am I," or was it a separate kind of choice?
You know, it was just kind of like I don't feel like doing this, you know, if you guys aren't going to, you know, be together and, you know, that was just kind of, you know, your parents were there at your bar mitzvah and they paid for it. And, you know, it was this big, huge party, almost like a wedding sometimes. And my parents just weren't that into it. They weren't into each other anymore. And I was like, you know, forget this. I'm not doing it.
My parents were divorced at the same age, and that's a real harsh kind of reality where you're just like, oh, everything that I've known or anticipated from life will be different from here on out.
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of all you can do to kind of get back at them. Like, why are you doing this to me? You know, like, why would you ruin my life like this? So yeah, I just wasn't interested in doing anything they wanted me to do.
Do you have other siblings?
At the time, I had a younger brother, 4 years younger, and he's fantastic, still lives with his family in Texas. And then my dad, pretty soon after, remarried. And so I have two stepsisters from that marriage.
Hmm. And so do you live with mom at the divorce or with dad?
So dad, my mom actually took off. She kind of did this whole soul-searching thing. She moved across the country to Oregon for 5 years, and she kind of lived, you know, penniless, and, you know, it was kind of her own hero's journey, I guess, where she just lived by herself and journaled and figured out her whole life and everything in it. We saw her in the summer, and she was still my mom, but we lived with my dad and my stepmom, so...
What's that like as a teenage girl, essentially 12 is that tween age, but as a teenage girl, you rely so heavily on your mom, but mom is sort of absent.
Yeah, it was really, really, really hard. And it took me a really long time to forgive her for kind of abandoning me at such a crucial point in my life where I needed her. I mean, you know, there's all the teenage changes that happen and the prom dress shopping and the learning how to do makeup and all of those things. And my stepmom, while she was a nice lady wasn't really interested in, she had two daughters of her own and wasn't interested in taking on a third. And so, you know, I just kind of missed out on all that stuff. I kind of just figured it out on my own and wasn't really very good at it. And I just kind of stayed the eternal tomboy.
So then that obviously forms kind of your later teenage years. So what does college look like?
So college, I was just super excited to get as far away from all of that as I possibly could, to kind of go out on my own and do life on my own terms, which I absolutely did. I went to the University of Texas at Austin, so go Longhorns.
Yeah, hook 'em horns, baby.
Yeah. And they were actually amazing at sports when I was there. It was really, really fun to root for the Longhorns because they were really good at football and really good at basketball. And I think won the national champion that year. We had Ricky Williams, who won the Heisman. So really, really fun, you know, beginning of college experience. I went to college, you know, a Jewish girl and did all of the college things just like any other college student at a party school would. I actually thought when I went to college that what separated the good kids from the bad kids were those who drank only on the weekends versus the kids that just drank straight through the week.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, that is a good way to divide the kids, perhaps. I think it's worth noting, though, about University of Texas. Like, people, if you don't or have never been, it's a different kind of thing. There's like 100,000 people that fit into that stadium down there at UT at
mm-hmm.
Austin.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
the entire city turns burnt orange, not just day of the game, it's the weekend. If it's a home game and you are anywhere near the football stadium, it's over. You're not getting anywhere quick. But the other...
No,
but,
it's... Go ahead.
I was going to say, but the other thing that I noticed too is that, like the Chicago Cubs or the New York Yankees or, you know, Red Sox, these are all baseball teams, but these are teams that there are fans of them outside of the area. So you wear a Longhorn shirt anywhere and you will get people. I was sort of alarmed. I bought a t-shirt when I was down there in Austin because I just liked the feel of the shirt and the look of the shirt, and people kept doing the horn thing at me, you know, and yelling at me, and I'm like, what is this phenomenon? And it's just people being fanatic about their team.
Absolutely, everywhere. I get so excited when I see Longhorn fans here in Idaho, and there's tons of them. So couldn't get any farther away from Texas here in Idaho. So, oh yeah, we're everywhere.
Quite the difference to get from Idaho, from Austin, and I'm sure we'll get there. So you kind of distinguish that the experience of college, especially at a party school like that, is that there's a lot of drinking, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. How does your Jewish roots fit into that?
Well, I have this story about my grandpa, actually. So my senior year in high school, my grandpa was in a nursing home just down the street from my high school. And so I spent a lot of time with him, my dad's dad. And he had lost his wife when I was younger. But, you know, they loved each other very, very much. And my grandpa never had the opportunity to go to college. And so he was really proud of my dad, who was the first, you know, kind of college graduate in his line, also from University of Texas. And then he was really proud of me for getting into college and going to college. And so his advice to me was always, you know, don't waste your time in college. Don't waste away this opportunity. Go to college, learn something, become something, you know, come out with an employable skill. And so he was, you know, always giving me kind of advice like that. So I always had my grandpa's advice in the back of my head. And so I was a good kid. You know, I did all the college stuff on the weekends, but during the week I was up at 8 a.m., got to my classes, did my schoolwork. And I was always very conscious of my grandpa and how proud he was of me for getting to college and being a good student. And so I really wanted to live up to that ideal.
That's a tremendous amount of weight. How did you execute that in a way that you didn't allow it to take too much weight on you? Does that make sense?
You know, yeah, I've always been a good student. I mean, I've always been, you know, kind of a a perfectionist, a rule follower, which will come into play in my conversion story later. But, you know, I've always just, you know, and I'm sure that stems from kind of part of it's just biological and part of it's just, you know, all the things that happened to me in my life. But I've always, you know, been on student government and done sports and extracurricular and in the service organizations and good at schoolwork. I've always just had put that pressure on myself. Nobody really put that pressure on me. I think I've always just been very self-motivated to be a high achiever. That's just kind of ingrained in me somehow.
So you're able to do that then?
I think so. And yeah, I mean, I got into the business school, which is really difficult to do, especially as a freshman at the University of Texas. I remember when I left the business school, everyone thought I was crazy. They were like, do you understand you're giving up this position? It's very difficult to get. And I understood and I walked away from the business school, but yeah, I mean, I've always been a very, very high achiever, very, very studious. I graduated seventh in my class in high school and then magna cum laude in college. So yeah, always, always very studious.
What made you walk away from the business school?
You know, when I started college, I was a business major with the idea that I was business/pre-med. So I wanted to be a doctor, an actual pediatrician. And it's really interesting because, you know, I didn't actually realize, and it's such a different world probably where you and probably most of your listeners grew up, but I wasn't aware of the option really of being kind of a stay-at-home mom. To me, women work, but I wanted a career where I would be able to be available for my kids. I knew I wanted to be a mom and a good mom. And so I kind of did a lot of research into, you know, what are good paying, you know, professions that allow you the flexibility to be available for your kids. And so being a pediatrician was what I found. You know, you could be in practice with other pediatricians and, you know, then you could have a day off and you could be home with your kids sometimes. And so that was my plan when I got to college, was I got into the business school, and so I wasn't going to turn down that opportunity. And then I was going to go pre-med. So I didn't go easy on myself. I had a terrible, you know, course load my freshman year. I learned real quick that 8 o'clock classes are not a good idea. But but after joining the church, I realized that I did have the option of being a stay-at-home mom, which was kind of mind-blowing to me. I didn't, you know, ever realize that that was available before. And so I thought, well, I still want to work with kids because I really like kids. And again, I was really interested in different relationships, and I knew that nothing in the business school was going to give me what I needed. And so I actually left the business school. I had so many credits from my freshman year that I was able to rework my schedule as a sociology major and graduate in 3 years, which was a huge blessing. So
you made a giant leap from leaving business school to converting and then to the church and then graduating from college. Let's take a break for a second. And when we come back, I want to fill in all of that space, your conversion story, coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N, at gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. If you are not a Patreon subscriber, we encourage you to do so. Monica, you made that giant leap like, hey, I just left the business school and then joined the church and then completely changed my life. I want you to tell me that conversion story.
Okay. I'll try to tell it quickly, but you actually got it in reverse order. I joined the church first and then left the business.
Oh, cool. See, I don't even know the details. You need to tell me more.
Okay, well, I'll try to be quick about it. So what happened was, like I said, I started my freshman year like a regular old, you know, college student, figuring out how to be away from home and who I was, and just like any other college student would. And early in my freshman year, my grandpa passed away, the one I was really close to. And
the one who basically said, hey, don't waste this time, this mortal existence.
Totally.
Make sure you get a great job and all these things. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got word that he passed away. I was just devastated because I didn't have a chance to say goodbye or anything like that. And so I kind of mourned in my own way. And the Jewish religion doesn't teach a whole lot about the afterlife. I mean, it's kind of like everything happens to you while you're alive, and when you die, it's just over, right? And so I kind of made up my own idea of what I felt like, where I felt like my grandpa went. And I knew in my heart of hearts that he was back with my grandma. I knew that they were reunited. And I just felt like he was sitting up in heaven somewhere looking down on me. Like he could see me now, everything that I was doing, all the choices that I was making. And so that had a huge impact on me.
That's very atypical for a Jewish faith.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. It was just kind of my own, the way I kind of coped with his death. And like I needed to have a place for him. And so my guardian angel was his place. And so I continued to go through college, but I stopped drinking. And I just, not forever, just until I was 21. I just thought, you know what, I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to jeopardize, you know, my college experience in any way. Mm-hmm. And so I still, you know, had the roommates that wanted to go to all the parties all the time. And so I just became the designated driver. So I was like the most popular girl in the dorm.
I was going to say, you're probably the best friend of most people.
Absolutely. Everyone wanted to go with me because they knew they were going to get home safe. They knew they were, you know, protected. So I continued to do, you know, all the college things, you know, had a great college experience. But I would just drink water. I would go to the parties and drink water. And there was this guy there who I would always see, and he would always be drinking water too. And so we'd kind of stand off to the side and watch our friends be stupid and, you know, drink water and laugh at everybody. And at the end of the night, we'd kind of gather up our little tribe of people and get them home and proceed to hold their hair back and all of that.
Would you say clever things like, oh yeah, that's cold water. Or that ice in that water. Whew, as you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We were the funnest sober people you would ever meet. You probably would have no idea that we were sober standing there. We were having way more fun than all of the drunk people. I'm sure of it.
but you start to notice each other and going, hey, you're not drinking either.
Yeah, we got really close, actually, and kind of depended on each other to be there. Otherwise, we were kind of holding down the fort on our own. So, we got really close. And what happened was the freshman year ended, and he kind of would try to ask me out a little bit towards the end of freshman year. But like I said, very self-motivated. I'm like, no, we've got finals. I remember he asked me to go see, back then it was Finding Nemo, it was just coming out.
That oh, yeah, he did. Me. Yes, he did.
He asked me to go see Finding Nemo, and I thought, listen, I have got finals to study for, and you want to take me to, like, a kid's movie? Mm-hmm. I'm like, hard pass. So, finals are over, summer started, all the kids go home, all my friends go home, but I decided to stay and take more classes. I got a job as the resident assistant in my dorm, which meant that I had to stay for the summer and work. And his family lived there in Austin close by, and so he stayed and went to classes. And the most interesting thing happened. We ended up with about the same schedule. So I was still pre-med, and so my schedule, in the morning I would get up and I would go to the hospital, and I would volunteer in the recovery, the infant recovery room. So the kids would come out of surgery, and I would help, you know, kind of bring them out of the anesthesia. And then I would do that for the morning, and then I would go to lunch, and then I had a couple classes. And he was interning with one of the surgeons, and then we ended up in the same class after lunch, which was amazing because, like you said, there's hundreds of thousands of students at the University of Texas. So to have the same class with someone is just totally, I mean, it's a God thing for sure.
Yeah.
So we end up with the same schedule. You know, we're hanging out all summer long. At the end of the summer, I had a family reunion. My dad said, invite somebody because I would have to drive all this way through these little towns in Texas, and he didn't want me going by myself, and so I invited Donnie to come with us.
Donnie is this guy.
Reunion. Donnie's the guy, yeah. And we get to this little tiny town in Frio, Texas, and he says, I think, you know, it's a three-hour drive. We're talking about kind of eternal family type things, nothing that I'm pulling out as strange, just he's telling me a little bit about why he doesn't drink and things like that. Of course, I thought that was strange.
Mm-hmm. What did he say? Did he go full on word of wisdom, or was he just like, well, I go to a church that has a health code and we believe?
No. It wasn't like that. It started out, he asked me why I didn't drink, and I had never really shared anyone the real reason. Nobody really cared as long as I was a designated driver, but for some reason I felt like I could share that with him, and so I told him my grandpa and how I felt about it and where I thought he was, and my guess is a Mormon guy that sparked his, oh, mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yeah.
We got to share something with her. So that kind of sparked the conversation of a little bit about his view of what happens to people when they die. And, he shared with me that he would never drink. And I'm looking at him like, what alien planet are you from? Why wouldn't you drink? I mean, drinking is great. You know, I thought when I was 21, I would, you know, enjoy a margarita here and there. And, you know, but he was just, oh no, I'll never drink. I'll never do drugs. You know, premarital sex. I mean, we got into all of that. And I just remember thinking, what planet was this kid raised on?
Because and I hope he said Kolob. I hope he said Kolob is the answer.
He might have, actually. I probably missed it. He might have said that.
And then he just muses to himself going, she doesn't understand.
No, so far. I couldn't figure out how this alien boy got to the University of Texas and maintained this set of standards that mm-hmm. I thought was crazy. And so, you know, he's kind of just slowly throwing in little church doctrines here and there. We get to Frio, Texas, where my family, we have our reunion every year, and it's basically you sit in the river, you drink beer, you talk to everybody, you get passed out drunk and do it all again the next day. Hmm. And since obviously we weren't doing that, we had a lot of time to talk, and just we got there and he's like, I think we should go to church. And again, I'm like, oh my gosh, Like, I know kids go to church, but I mean, I thought it was kind of like your parents made you go, but you're on vacation, and why would you, like, volunteer to go to church when you don't have to? I just thought the whole thing was crazy, but I was like, sure, if you want to go, I'll go with you. And so he finds a church close by, well, about probably 45 minutes away. And, you know, he's kind of trying to help me. He's like, well, I think that you're going to feel more comfortable if you find like a dress or a skirt of some sort to wear. And I'm thinking, I mean, I've got my bathing suit and some cover-ups, and that's about it. So I find my aunt, who has this tiny, teeny weeny, like barely covering your butt cheeks, little mini skirt. And I have this little spaghetti strap shirt on top. And he's wearing jeans and a t-shirt because that wasn't his plan originally.
Sure.
And so we walk into this little branch in Frio, Texas on Sunday morning and pretty much blow everyone away. Like, who are these people?
Yeah, it definitely probably struck a chord where they're like, okay, well, that's different. But, I mean, I know I have gone to church in shorts and a t-shirt just because I'm like, it wasn't my plan. But they definitely attended to you.
Absolutely. They were very, very welcoming. We were greeted at the door. You know, they made sure we knew where to go. And, you know, Donnie had his CTR ring kind of turned around the other way. He was a little embarrassed. But we go into sacrament meeting, and he's explaining the whole thing to me. And sacrament meeting was amazing. I definitely felt the spirit. The talks were incredible. I actually went back 10 years later after I joined the church and found the woman who gave the sacrament meeting talk that I just absolutely loved. And so that was a pretty special experience. But
wait, hang on. What was her talk about? And what was it that touched you so much about it?
It really was about the spirit. I mean, the whole talk was about the spirit, but it wasn't necessarily like you had to be a member of the church. It was kind of like the light of Christ and feeling the spirit and understanding the spirit. And it was the absolute perfect talk for someone who had no clue what they were doing at church. It totally explained to me all the feelings I was feeling.
Did she have any idea of the impact that she had had on you?
Oh, no. There's no possible way she could have. She knows now. I found her 10 years later.
What was that reuniting like?
It was really cool. I mean, she was just this sweet, humble woman who had lived in this little tiny town in Texas her entire life and had no idea that, you know, her little sacrament meeting talk that, you know, she'd probably prepared the week before was going to, you know, have such a huge impact in changing this little Jewish girl's life. So, it was a neat experience to meet her.
So you hear the talk, you feel the spirit, which you probably identify later as the spirit. You weren't like, I'm feeling the spirit converting my soul.
Right.
How did the rest of the meetings go?
Yeah, so Sunday school is completely over my head. I was totally lost. I had no idea. They were probably discussing some chapter in the Book of Mormon that I obviously had never read. So no idea what they're talking about there. And then instead of the third block Relief Society priesthood, Donnie convinced the missionaries to teach me the first discussion, which was awesome. They gave me a Book of Mormon, taught me the first discussion, went home with my highlighted scriptures to read, and the rest is kind of history. I was pretty much the golden contact from there.
So you read, you pray, you gain a witness, and then you get baptized?
It took a little while. My family was very against it. I went to church a few more times with Donnie. I met his family, which was, when I met Donnie's family for the first time, I thought I had like traveled in time back to the 1960s. I thought, how on earth do you have this family that prays together and eats together and goes to church together, and mom's wearing an apron and in her dress, and it just, I couldn't believe, and definitely felt the spirit in their home so strong. You know, it was the beginning inklings of, this is what I want. This is how I want to feel in my home when I have a family. So, meeting his family was instrumental. Meeting the missionaries that served in the university ward there at the University of Texas was amazing. One of those missionaries who eventually was the one who baptized me, I remember he bore his testimony to me at the end of their discussion, and I thought, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I thought, I want to know that, just like he knows that. Like, that was the first time I really prayed with all the conviction of my heart to know whether or not that this church was true.
Was your parents, your parents' opposition, or your dad's opposition, certainly, but familial huge, opposition, huge. Due to just like traditions of their fathers, or like what was the big deal?
You know, I don't necessarily think it was like a whole Jewish Christian thing. I think my dad's biggest fear was that I was making a huge mistake. He started reading, you know, all the, like a good dad would, you know, got every book he could find on the church. And of course, it's all anti-Mormon literature. And mm-hmm. he's calling me with, you know, the sexist, the racist, the...
You know, they sacrifice, you know, virgins, don't you? No, no,
yes,
Dad, they don't.
All of that.
No, they don't do that, Dad.
All of that. Every night, huge, huge discussion about all of these, you know, terrible, terrible things about the church. And really a neat miracle happened there. I ended up, you know, I felt so strongly about it. You know, I couldn't personally overcome any of my dad's objections because I just didn't know enough, but I knew that they weren't coming from the right place. I knew that I felt the Spirit. I knew that I was in the right, you know, doing the right thing. But I felt like after fasting about it and, you know, really learning from the missionaries, I felt the need to speak face to face with my dad. And so I met him for lunch one day. He told me this incredible, miraculous story about his workout partner who, after they had been working out for years together, were the best of friends, knew everything about each other, except apparently that he was a member of the church. So my dad is sharing with him that, you know, that I'm, you know, doing this crazy thing and I'm with a boy and I'm trying to join this crazy church, and sets this to his workout buddy, who is like, oh, I'm a member of that church.
I was going to say, which sort of raises the question, right? Like, at some point, shouldn't your dad have sort of known that about his friend? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, on some point, and I guess it's, you know, appropriate to the time, but like most people who know me know that I'm a member of the church. Maybe I'm just overt about it or something.
Right. And, you know, it's so amazing because, I mean, obviously Heavenly Father knows us so well and individually and knows what we need. And both in my case and in my dad's case, we got really, really close to a member of the church who never shared that information with us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously we built such a strong relationship of trust and love without knowing that. But they were able to influence our lives, and then it was very easy to take once they shared that with us. Like, so, it wasn't something weird or, you know, foreign, because we knew them and we loved them. So
this workout partner is able to just talk to your dad and be like, "All right, calm down.
Right.
Let's talk through these things."
Yeah, absolutely, and kind of put aside all of his fears. And so my dad, I mean, he still wasn't like, woohoo, I'm so excited. But he was like, you know what, I if this is really what you want to do and you feel really this strongly about it, then I'll be there and I'll support you. And he's been very supportive, you know, for the last 20 years. So
then based on what you just said, I would interpret that he still is Jewish, or a Jewish tradition, and not joined the church.
You know, I don't know what religion I would call my dad. He is Jewish for sure, but he like I said, he remarried, and the woman he remarried is a Methodist. So he did kind of leave the faith. He'll never be Christian. Mm-hmm. I'm certain of that. But I don't think that he is fully Jewish anymore either. He just kind of, I think my dad kind of believes in the universe.
It's an interesting thing because you guys have kids, so that dynamic between a grandparent, that's something we haven't talked too much about here in the Cultural Hall, about those kind of mixed religious families. Has that ever been a thing where one of your kids has said something to grandpa, like, you should be a Mormon, or vice versa?
Oh, all the time. My parents, both of them, they know enough about the church that they'll never convert in this lifetime. I mean, they're never going to actually join the church, but they know enough that, you know, they're always joking about how we're going to do their work for, you know, we'll take care of them after they're dead.
Yeah. You got this when I die, right? Yeah, you bet.
Totally. He's always saying, oh, my daughter, my grandkids, they'll make sure I get to the right place, you know.
You know, Dad, it doesn't have to be once you die. Yeah, no, I know, but just go ahead and take care of it when I pass away.
Oh, yeah. I keep telling him, I'm like, Dad, you could join the church and then you could be in the temple when my kids get married. And he's like, oh, well, get me a meeting with the prophet. We'll see about that, you know. So
it'd be pretty awesome if you could get him a meeting with the prophet and be like, Dad, I got this. Now what do you got? Now what's the excuse?
You're getting baptized now? Yeah, I don't think that will ever happen, but
I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to know if Donnie is your husband. We certainly have gone the way about Donnie, and in the romanticized TV version of this story, he is your husband. But we're going to find that out coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Consumer alert! Consumer alert!
Dan, the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. There's an extremely insane computer infection called Zeus ZBot, infecting hundreds of thousands of computers across the world. This infection is super malicious because it puts you in danger by recording every keystroke you make into your computer, stealing your confidential information, including your banking passwords. You could be infected and never know until you have all your money sucked out of your bank account. At PC Laptops, we can help. If you think you've been infected or just want to be safe, please bring in your PC, no matter what brand it is, into any one of our locations right now, and we'll scan it for free. Why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you.
Time here in the third block of the Cultural Hall. If you're not following the Cultural Hall on whatever social media of choice that you indulge in, please do. It's at the Cultural Hall wherever you are at. That's places like Facebook, places like, you know, the Instagram, places like, oh, I don't know, Twitter. I will say this, though. I got this email. I'm trying to pull it up here real quick. I hope I can find the name of the person. Oh, I can't. Oh, nope. I thought I had it and I don't. Someone emailed us contact@theculturalhall.com the other day and said, hey, just so you know, Google Plus, not a thing. Keep mentioning it and people won't be able to find you there. So I'm going to keep mentioning it and you won't be able to find us there. You can also find us on Google Plus. Monica, is Donnie the husband?
He is not the husband.
Okay, wait a minute.
He is a husband, but not my husband.
Okay, so how does that work? This guy introduces you to the church in the, and you have to admit, then now we're kind of treading on these sort of awkward waters to finish out the story in the way that we would read it in a book from Deseret Book. You two get married after you join the church. So fill us in.
Well, Donnie's amazing, amazing guy, and we still chat every once in a while over Facebook. He, you know, in the time that he was teaching me the gospel, he should have been on his mission. So he taught me the gospel, and then after I joined the church, I worked really, really hard to get him on a mission. It was kind of a joint effort, I would have to say. But he was a great guy, and he did what he needed to do to get himself on a mission and served an amazing mission, I'm sure, in Argentina. And right before he left, I went and I spoke at his farewell. And, you know, we kind of spent those last moments together, and he you know, shared a scripture with me and told me he was coming back to marry me. And I said, go serve a really good mission and we'll see. And
maybe, so I sent him but out. You need to leave. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I was very much a member of the church and was very much like, I will marry a returned missionary. So mm-hmm. So he goes out and, you know, we were in contact, but not too much. I didn't want to be too much of a distraction for him. And so I did kind of date around and, you know, met some guys, nobody that blew me away until my actual husband ended up there in the singles ward. I had just graduated from college. I had just graduated from Institute. He first saw me at Institute graduation. I spoke at Institute graduation. He said, I need to meet that girl. He was persistent and met me. And once we met and started talking, we never stopped talking. And so that was about a year into Donnie's mission. I kind of wrote him the Dear John.
Oh.
His mom cried a lot.
You said he cried a lot or you cried a lot?
His mom actually cried more than anyone.
Because she had the Deseret Book version of this story.
Right. And I loved his mom. She is one of the most wonderful people on the planet. Sweetest people I've ever met. But it just wasn't in the cards. I met my husband and I knew pretty much right away that we would be together forever. And it was the best decision I ever made. Donnie came home from his mission. I think he kind of did his own thing for a little while and he's married now with several children and very happy. And so I think it turned out great for everyone.
Absolutely. What was it about your husband that made you go, yeah, pretty much you said, immediately, what was it about him that made you go, yeah, this is the deal?
Well, besides the physical attraction,
which is important. Everyone plays that down.
Very.
And I just think, you know, like I think of my wife to be here shortly. I'm getting married on the 9th of October and she's hot. I love it. And I have no problem just being like, oh man, I love the way she looks so much.
Yes. So, you know, I immediately felt a physical attraction to him, but we just sunk up our hopes and dreams and visions of the future just aligned really well. And he had a great temperament, a great work ethic. I mean, he was a very worthy priesthood holder. I didn't feel like that wavered at all, which was really important to me, being a new-ish member of the church. His family, you know, goes all the way back to the pioneers. Mm-hmm. In that summer when we started dating, or when we met each other, I had the opportunity, another God thing, to meet his entire family. By the end of the summer, he worked that summer. He had come with his older brother, and so I got to know him really well. And then I was an EFY counselor, and traveling with EFY met his older sister, his three younger sisters, and I came home from EFY kind of like, what's the next step? And he said, jump in my non-air-conditioned, no-radio beater truck, and we're going to drive, you know, 32 hours from Texas through Phoenix, my mission, in the middle of August, up to Idaho and meet my mom. And by the time we had that experience together, we were like, I think it's kind of a done deal.
Did Dad have to approve?
Dad never approved. Yeah, imagine this. Ben's going to school at BYU, Idaho, and he tells his roommates, I'm going to go ask my sweetheart's dad if I can marry him, buys a plane ticket with his own money, flies down to Texas, asks my dad if he can marry me, and my dad is like, absolutely no way, not happening, not getting my blessing.
Now, did he say it actually like that, like no way, just shut the door, no way, or was he trying to be kinder about that?
No, I don't think my dad was trying to be kind at that point. I think he was like, you will not marry my daughter. You are not done with school. You do not have a job. I know you Mormon boys, and if it's about the sex, it's not going to be my daughter. So he was like, absolutely not happening.
Hmm. So he obviously broke down a little bit.
No, actually not. You know, I went to my dad after that and said, Dad, what, I mean, we love each other. We want to get married. What would you have us do? And he says, well, I mean, try living in the same zip code for more than a couple of months,
which is kind of a valid point. I mean, I don't want to take Dad's right. side and be a downer on this, but there is definitely something to long distance relationships and close quarters relationships that is completely incomparable.
Right. No, you're right. So, yeah. So I packed up my things from Texas, moved to a frigid wasteland in the middle of October. I literally thought that my internal organs were going to freeze. I thought I was going to die, but I did it. I moved to Rexburg in October. We hung out for a little while and realized that this was so silly. We just wanted to get married. Called my dad, said, hey, we're in the same zip code. We still want to get married. My dad said, no way. I will cut you off. I do not support this. No way, no how. We waited like one more month. Ben proposed. I said yes. We called my dad the next morning and said, we're going to give you 6 months of engagement to get used to the idea, but I proposed to your daughter. She said yes. Have a nice day.
Yeah. Hung up the phone. Click. Hello? Hey, is that phone call for real? Hello? Hello? So then he comes around, yes?
I think he came around when I came out of the temple. I mean, he saw me in my wedding dress. I mean, we kind of sealed the deal. I come out of they were kicking and screaming pretty much till the day of. But I came out of the temple. He saw his probably glowing all-in-white daughter and, you know, gave me a big hug and said, okay, you know, you've done this. I love you. Please don't have a baby right away. Guess what we did?
I'm guessing, based on what I know about your temperament, you had a baby right away.
I mean, we gave it a couple of months,
it wasn't a honeymoon baby. What does he want from us?
Right, exactly. We did nothing to prevent it.
Let me ask you this. Given the changes in temple marriage and temple sealing, would you still have got... If you were to get married today, would you get married outside of the temple and then just go get sealed?
You know what? I am disappointed. When that came down, I thought, you know, probably my only regret ever in life, I am my dad's only daughter. Yeah. And he did not get a chance to walk me down the aisle. And I am certain that that is still a sore spot for him. I mean, he never got to walk his daughter down the aisle. And I'm, you know, kind of now planning. I have two daughters of my own, and I'm hoping that my dad will be able to walk them down an aisle just mm-hmm. to kind of make up for it. So, yeah, that was a little bit sad when I got that news. I'm really happy for anyone getting married now in the same situation or similar situation that I face, but I would have loved to give my dad that opportunity. So,
yeah, it's interesting and grateful for the continued, you know, revelation, if that's what it is, changes, if that's what they are, whatever it is. I think that especially in those kind of mixed families, I feel so strongly that it's such a great opportunity now to be able to have entire families be there as two families unite.
Yeah, I agree. You know, my parents were great. They came and they walked around the temple grounds and you know, by then they had a lot of friends that were members of the church, which was really cool that, you know, came, you know, flew to Salt Lake for our sealing and, you know, walked around the temple with my parents. And so that was all very neat and it was a great experience. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing I wouldn't give to have my dad walk me down the aisle.
What about mom in all of this? I feel like mom was kind of there. You mentioned that she did a journaling thing for a few years, but is she just like, well, whatever, I'm doing whatever, you do whatever, or what is her reaction to all this?
You know, my mom is probably one of the most amazing. Through her journey and through all she experienced in her life and that 5 years that she spent learning about herself and world religions, my mom has become one of the most accepting, loving, understanding, tolerant people in the world. Mm-hmm. And I would say her entire role through this whole thing was she just wanted me to be happy. You know, she just wanted me to live my truth and, you know, be happy. And she was just a huge support through the entire thing, which was such a blessing to me because she was probably the only one that took that stance.
It continues to be a fascinating thing where in the 21st century, where so much is known and we just sort of progress as a human race so much that still with these different groups, whether they be religious or otherwise, if it's just something that is different, how very quickly, just as humans, right? Not this isn't speaking about your family in particular, but just as humans, we find ourselves going, wait, what? Hold on. Hank, what? Yeah. What is this? As anyone tries to make those movements or those changes. Before I let you go, there's three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall, so I'll ask those of you right now. The first question is, do you have a calling, and if so, what is it?
Absolutely. My husband and I teach the 16-year-old Sunday school together, and our son's in that class. It is a fantastic class. We know and love those kids like they're our own. they're at our house all the time. And so it's such a fun thing to teach that class because we feel like they're our own kids. We have some amazing discussions and they're at such a pivotal time in their life. It's just such a fun time to be able to have a tiny influence on them.
Does your son love that you're the teacher?
We've kind of made it our mission in life to embarrass him, but he is a good sport. He's a very good sport. We do our best to really make it uncomfortable for him, but but he is a very good sport about it.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Oh, anything with the youth. I have such a special place in my heart for the youth of the church. I mean, the young men, young women, anything involved with them. There's so much to the term teenage angst. I think these kids, I mean, I remember it in my own life and I'm seeing it now in my children's lives. There's so much that they have to figure out about who they are and who they want to be and how they want to portray themselves. And, you know, it's such an amazing opportunity to be able to be there for them in that time that they're trying to figure it all out. And I think, I think that more than anything at that age, these kids need just unconditional, non-judgmental love, like the love that the Savior has for them. They need to be able to see that in human love. And I think that because of everything that I've experienced in my life, I can just love them. I don't judge them in any way. I know they're going to make mistakes. I know they're going to struggle, and I love to be able to just be there for them and love them exactly where they're at. So anything with the youth is my dream, ideal calling.
I love that. The last question that we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Great question. My favorite part of my faith is just understanding who I am in relation to my Father in heaven, knowing that I am his daughter and that he loves me and that no matter where I'm at, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically, that he wants the best for me. I love understanding the plan of happiness and that I have a really important part to play in that plan, and always being able to, you know, kneel before my Father in heaven and say, what would you have me do? And to be able to, you know, be his daughter and understand that and help others understand that. I think that's my favorite.
Well, we hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the